Hello, and welcome to another fascinating issue of Charlie Cook's Insider Club audio programs, jam-packed with the most realistic, practical and up-to-date money-making secrets. Your host is Charlie Cook. Charlie has been helping business owners attract clients and maximize their profits for over two decades. And while most people were still trying to figure out how to use the web, Charlie sold his second website for just under $1 million. Today, Charlie is one of the most sought-after business mentors on the web and a best-selling author, recommended by some of the top marketing and sales experts of all time, including Brian Tracy, Tom Hopkins, J. Conrad Levinson, as well as online entrepreneurs like Yannick Silver. To get the maximum benefits out of this month's program, ask yourself these questions during the interview. How can I apply these ideas to my business and to my life? How can I do things differently and get better results? And what actions can I take today, this week, and this month to reach my goals? And you'll want to listen to the interview more than once. Every time you do, you'll discover new ideas, new strategies, and new ways to sell more of your products and your services. Make more money, and be more successful. Every entrepreneur, every small business owner struggles with the same issue. As you work to grow your business, work to develop products and services, marketing, fulfillment, and managing your growing staff, you run into the same problem. There never seems anything done. You find yourself wishing for a clone or seems to be enough time to get everything for an extra day. You find yourself wishing for a clone or for an extra day of the week or an extra week each month so you can keep up with existing clients and keep your business growing. But none of those things are possible. You can't create time out of thin air. So what's the solution? Make better use of the time you have each day and get more done. On this CD, Charlie interviews Dave Crenshaw. Dave has shown business leaders worldwide how to uncover hidden hours every day and increase their per-hour tasking, how doing it all gets nothing done. As a highly sought-after business coach and time management expert to some of the country's top business executives today for gifts, he's matching. Dave's mission is to help you get more time, and if you're like his clients, Dave's techniques could help you free up 30 to 50% of your time. In the next few minutes, you'll discover how to get organized, get focused, and business get time. Coach and time management expert.
Hello, this is Charlie Cook, and over the years I have worked with a wide range of clients, ones who sell Western wear, to people who market alcohol treatment programs, to people who want to sell more of their own sales courses online. And everyone has the same problem. They don't have as much time as they want to take the ideas I give them.
It's nothing done.
And to implement them. And they're frustrated because they know what to do but can't find the time to do it. If you ever felt you didn't have enough time to get everything done to grow your business, this is for you. Today I have Dave Crenshaw on the line, and he's going to share with us his simple strategies to give you
for business coach and time management expert
more time. Dave, welcome to the call.
Thank you very much, Charlie. That's exactly where...
Dave, thanks for joining us. Can you start by telling us a little bit about your background and how you got into
coach? And my background with business started, I began over a decade ago as a small business owner to, of course, implement those owners. But I saw a recurring problem. I would sit down with the business owner and say, okay, what are the systems and process actions and procedures with their business? Steps that you need to take on those action steps. And I'd come back in 2 weeks to speak to them, and I'd say, okay, over the next, tell me, Mrs. Business Owner or Mrs. Business Owner, how'd you do on the assignment? I'll follow up with you and see how you did on those action steps. And the answer was the same every time, right? I didn't get around to it. I didn't have enough time. I couldn't do it. And I realized that something needed to change drastically. I was doing them a disservice by spending all my time talking about business systems. And that's really where I started to turn my focus more to personal, handle email, voicemail, fax, systems and processes and procedures with their business. Marketing, just management, being just calendaring, just desk organization, all of those things, and started to help my clients out, and it just made a huge difference. And then I'm having they're mandatory for my clients to go through the program, management teams go through the program, and pretty soon I had a whole different business that I was involved in.
So basically all the great business systems and great business ideas in the world don't count for much unless people personally know how to structure their day so they can implement them.
Right, exactly. It doesn't matter how well documented your sales process is. If your sales executive doesn't follow or doesn't respond to email in a timely manner, the whole thing goes out the window. If someone hands you a business card and you lose that business card, it doesn't matter how good your product is, you're not going to close sales. And it's interesting, when I take, on a one-on-one basis, if I'll take a CEO through my training process, it's like Christmas, because usually we'll uncover tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of what would have been lost opportunities that they had just let fall through the cracks because they didn't have very good follow-up or follow-through.
From your personal experience, what are the most common time wasters, things people do that use up time but don't get work done?
Well, the biggest, and you can probably get a hint at it with the title of my book, The Myth of Multitasking, is multitasking is a huge one. It's probably the biggest time waster that the business owners experience. And the reason why it's the biggest is because it's usually considered acceptable. Many people still pride themselves on the ability to multitask. They think that they're being more productive by doing that, when in fact they're getting much, much less done. BaseX Research out of New York did a study and found that the average knowledge worker loses 28% of their workday due to interruptions and the recovery time associated with those interruptions. Well, multitasking is simply a constant state of interruption. You're interrupting yourself, jumping back and forth between email, voicemail, talking to somebody, and you're always incurring switching cost, which is a transition time mentally between one activity and the other. And so when you do that, you think you're getting more done, you think you're accomplishing more, but you're actually accomplishing a whole
of multitasking would be what?
Well, the one that I gave, which is common, is someone trying to have a phone conversation while answering their email or surfing the internet.
Would be
of course
what?
Well, the one that I got left gave. You're being a whole lot less productive, and you're making a lot more mistakes. Which is common is someone trying to, the classic, sitting in a meeting while someone's using a BlackBerry. The problem is your brain is not able to handle multiple active tasks at the same time. It used to be an uphill climb to talk about this. It's not anymore, because there is a massive pile of evidence out there from people who are a lot more into research and spending the time to do the hard research than I am. I'm an entrepreneur, right? I just want the answers. But, I mean, there was a study just last month from Stanford, that said the same thing, that when you multitask, your brain isn't doing multiple things at the same time. What it's doing is switching back and forth rapidly. It's why I call multitasking switch tasking, because what you're really doing is just switching rapidly back and forth between these tasks, and it adds up to a lot of lost time and lost energy just in that switch, just in that transition.
So what are your thoughts about people who text message while they're driving? Or actually, there was an article in the New York Times a couple weeks ago about people who fail under the gun at work and use their laptop while they commute back and forth to work.
Right, and I think the answer is obvious. When you do two things like that, one thing is going to suffer. There was a study just in my backyard at the University of Utah that showed that, and the reason driving while talking on the cell phone, we're not even talking about texting using the laptop, for that is because your transition time is slowed whenever you engage in switch tasking. You're always going to take longer to do things. You're always going to make mistakes. And so definitely texting and using the computer while driving, not only is that extremely dangerous, but that in and of itself is inefficient. You're actually not going to get more done by doing that. So there's no point in adding the risk to your personal well-being at the same time that you're ruining your and the productivity.
Mm-hmm. In your book, you mentioned active and passive switching. Can you tell us
reason for
what the difference is and share some examples of each?
Sure. Active switches are ones that you initiate because your transition time is slowed whenever you engage. That's where you are interrupting yourself. Perhaps you're in the middle of reading a book, and you remembered that you needed to call somebody, and so you put the book down and make a call. Or you are sitting at your desk and you decide to check your email. Or are you doing anything about them? It's pretty much everything else falls into the passive switch category. Your phone ringing, someone coming and knocking your door and saying, hey, I've got just a quick question, email notification, all of these things, these are all passive switches. And it's important to understand the difference between just getting a new thought in the beginning of when you're door working on somewhere and saying, hey, now I've got that can be a question. It's important. Email notification, minimize both, all of it, but the way that you deal with minimizing both, you've got to use different tactics, different personal systems to pull that off.
Again, I just want to emphasize the cost of the
things. These are all
the active and passive, right? The neck switching varies probably depending on what you're trying to line of code. And
right.
They'll typically never get anything done.
Right, yeah. You're mentioning using the Irvine study says the app interrupted, and then the 2006 studies of Microsoft.
Read one study about software program
study says the average programmer said it took them 15 minutes to recover work. A knowledge worker can only go for 11 minutes until now interrupt. I don't know if it's always 15 minutes because not everyone listening to this call is a computer programmer, but I would say that it's probably on average about 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you just took that math and you said, on average, you're going to get interrupted 5 times every hour, and it's going to take you 5 minutes to recover from that interruption or that switch. Pretty soon you realize that all you're doing is just losing time in the switches. And that's really where that feeling comes from at the end of the day that all of us experienced at one time or another, where you put your feet up on the couch and you say, oh, I've been working so hard today. And your spouse comes up to you and says, oh, well, what were you doing today? And you kind of stop and think, say, oh, I don't know, but I was really busy. That's a symptom of a day constant switch tasking.
Or the other thing that seems to happen to a lot of the people I work with is day begins and they look sort of at all the things they need to do, and without a clear sort of sense of how they're going to organize them and get them done, they immediately feel overwhelmed because they just have no sense of, you know, with the assumption of the switch tasking that's involved, that they're never going to get through their task list.
Right. You've got it.
If they're interrupted every 7 minutes, people who are listening to this call, and most people, they'll typically never get any work with, and a lot of people out there are small business owners. They typically play multiple roles in their businesses and as well as, you know, in their lives. So what can they do to slow down the switch tasking and make more time? What's the strategy that they should focus on?
Well, before I get into the hard tactics, let me really make sure that we're on the same page with something conceptually, because it's very important. The first thing that we need to be on the same page with is you can't get rid of switches completely. There's no way to completely stop that from your life, and I'm sure that everyone listening to this has already thought that. Well, I can't stop. My customers need culprit that I, my employees and entrepreneurs, is that you are doing it to yourself. I had a great small business mentor, owners and entrepreneurs, who is that you are doing it to yourself. I decided one day when I was just not even finished with college, and he pulled me aside and he said, Dave, I see something in you that I saw in myself, and if you can fix it now, it'll bless your life. I said, great, what is it? And he said, well, I was about 45, and I was doing all these different things at once, trying to accomplish so many different things, and I just had too much to do, and I started to get angry. I started to get really frustrated. And I thought to myself, who did this to me? Who should I be angry with? And he realized that it was him, right? I mean, that's why you're laughing, because you know the answer. It was him. He was doing it to himself. And he said, if you can realize that most of the clients that have come to me, Charlie, that are business owners, when you're young, when you're just 20 or so, it'll bless your life. I see they or don't have one business. They have two or three or four businesses. And when macro tasking, it's impossible to be truly efficient in an environment where you're spreading yourself across many different interests. Another thing that I'll see is people who overextend themselves charitably. Now, I love charity. I contribute to causes. I think it's an important part of life. Yet, I run into, again, a lot of small business owners and entrepreneurs who everyone recognizes them as a community leader, recognizes what they can bring to the table, and so they get solicited a lot for these opportunities. And what they don't realize is that by saying yes to one more of these is saying no to all the other ones that they've already committed to. So they end up shortchanging all the other great things of their life outside of business. And we can even talk about family, too. They're shortchanging all these other things by overcommitting themselves. So it's really important for them to learn how to say no, not just to others, but also to themselves.
And just so we make it clear to people in terms of the benefit here, for the average entrepreneur, business owner who has a number of interests going, wearing a lot of hats, if they can take control of the things that they can manage in terms of the switch tasking, how much of a benefit are they going to get? How much more time in the day can they free up?
Well, they'll free up business. The average person, again, I go back to that study because I found it to be true in what I do. The average person loses 28% of their day. That's an entire work week every single month. And so by focusing, you're going to get back that time. The second thing is when you commit to just one area of your business or just one area of your life, as much as you can focus on it, you start to master it. There's that old saying, right? Jack of all trades, master of none. Well, in my experience, on an average, a small business owner is a jack of all trades. And what happens is they end up hitting us, never truly mastering any one of them. I use, for an example, I use the Arnold Schwarzenegger principle. Now, whether or not you agree with his politics, you'll see what I'm talking about very quickly. Arnold didn't start out at the beginning. He is trying to be a politician, a movie star, a bodybuilder, and a business owner. You're at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
First, he mastered one. First, he became an expert bodybuilder. And then a lot of people think he jumped into into movies. Next. But what he really did was he built a business. He started out by becoming a successful entrepreneur after he had mastered being a bodybuilder. Then once he had mastered being a business owner, then he went on to film. And then after he mastered film, he went on to politics. Now, a lot of people can argue whether or not he's mastered politics yet, right? But you get the point. And you can see this pattern over and over and over again with some of the most successful people in the world, is that they focused on mastering one thing first and then went on to the others. A lot of business owners feel that it's a badge of honor to be able to say, I can do all these many different things. But in fact, they're shortchanging all those other things by trying to do them at the same time.
So I it makes intellectual sense to me, but here's the emotional sort of thing that's ringing in my head is,
sure.
I've got a actually a number of clients who've sort of been in this situation. You know, one ran a printing business, and she, you know, was responsible for closing the deal with the top clients, managing, making sure the print jobs were happening, answering, you know, staff questions, and making sure everybody was doing their job. And typically, she'd be sitting in her office, and the phone would be ringing, she'd be getting emails, and people would be wandering in and out of her office. And at the end of the day, she felt like she, you know, she was your typical example of, you've described as switch tasking, and she hardly managed to make headway in any of those tasks. So what's the solution? What should she be doing differently to run the business and stay on top of things, but at the same time limit their switch tasking?
Sure. It comes down to starting with your MVAs. MVAs are your most valuable activities. I talk about this a lot in greater depth. I have another book that's coming out in May called Invaluable, The Secret to Becoming Irreplaceable. And in that, I talk about your most valuable activities. Those are the top two things that you do. Of all the different things that you could be spending your time doing in a work context, that are the most difficult to replace. Meaning, if you were to hire someone else to do those on your behalf, what would it cost you per hour to have someone else do them? And so, you know, and everyone listening to the call can do this. Write down the two most valuable activities that you do, the things that you would have to pay someone else a whole lot of money, a whole lot more money to do if you weren't doing them. Then take a look at how many hours you're working in an average week. Now, keep in mind that my definition of work week includes travel time to and from work and time spent thinking about work when at home. It's usually that second one that gets people because they realize, oh, my gosh, then I'm always working. But you've got to include that. Then ask yourself, honestly, of those hours that I'm spending working, how much time am I spending in just my two MVAs? And the answer is usually startling to people, especially business owners. The average business owner spends less than 30% of their time in their most valuable activities. That means that if they're working a 60-hour work week, that only 20 hours at most is spent in $100-an-hour work or $200-an-hour work. And the rest of the time is spent in $10-an-hour work or $15-an-hour work. And when you do that, you're marginalizing yourself. You're making yourself easy to replace, and you're not adding value to the bottom line of your business. So it comes down to first identifying those most valuable activities and then establishing a budget in your schedule and saying, I'm going to draw a line in the sand and I'm not going to cross this line. During these hours of the day, during these hours of the week, I am only going to do my most valuable activities. And my clients who have done this get huge gains from this, because now they're actually starting to add value to their business rather than just being one more employee running around with their, like a chicken with their head cut off.
That sounds like people could easily change the course of their business within weeks by using that one strategy.
Right, right. And it doesn't matter what you do. Yeah, a business owner, everybody's got a different strength. Everyone's got a different most valuable activity. It could be networking. It could be closing large sales for the company. It could be being the spokesperson for the company. It could be you're the marketing genius. Whatever it is, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that no one else in the company is going to do that, or at least they're not going to do it even remotely as well as you do. So if no one else is going to do it, you better be the one who focuses your time on doing that and let the people who can do the $10 and $12 an hour work do that.
Now, this isn't really within the scope of what we plan to talk about, but it sounds like, you know, A, the first thing is to figure out what you're good at, and then B is to schedule the time so you actually spend time on it. But then there's a big element in there that we haven't talked about, which is being able and willing to let go of it and delegate it, and then at some point knowing how to manage the people you're delegating to.
Right. Well, and I'll give one tactic that I talk about that helps with that. And this really is a switchbuster. One of the biggest time drains in any work environment is the dreaded double Q. It's the quick question. Oh, sorry, I got just a quick question. Right? That is a tremendous drain on productivity, because what's happening is it's just a constant state of switch tasking. And, you know, if I'm in the middle of an email, typing an email, someone comes in and says, hey, I've got just a quick question. And let's say that I focus on them 100%. When I'm done with that question, I still have to return my attention to the computer screen. I still have to figure out where I was, what I was thinking about. So a 30-second quick question can cost 5 minutes in productivity, probably for both people. So one tactic that that I suggest people implement, in fact, I had a CEO of a manufacturing company that implemented this and said it gave him gave a 30% productivity boost, is instituting one-to-one huddles. And a one-to-one huddle is a regular recurring meeting where you sit down with key people, the people that would be most likely to ask you quick questions, or you're asking them quick questions. And you stage all of those questions. You hold them off. You put them in a queue, and then you sit down with them face-to-face and go through those one-to-one with no other interruptions. And what happens when you do that is you start to realize that most of the quote, emergencies haven't really been emergencies. They've just been a whole bunch of quick questions that weren't dealt with properly or weren't dealt with in a timely manner.
Or there's another benefit to that also, which is when you train your staff, your employees, to think before they speak, because you scheduled them to talk to you on, you know, Thursday at 9 or whatever, instead of just running in and asking you, you're training them to do a number of things which have positive benefits. One is you're training them to take some responsibility for organizing their thinking and putting together all their ideas at once. And the other is, in doing so, you'll be amazed at how many of the questions they can answer themselves.
Right.
if they know they can't rely on you know, their boss to immediately give them feedback, but they have to wait 2 days, and in fact they need the answer sooner than then, you know, they may actually figure it out on their own.
Right. And that's a big part of my personal coaching package, is that we're training people how to stage those things appropriately, where to put those, and how to make decisions about what is an emergency and what isn't.
One of the issues is sometimes they call this a lazy approach to management, which people, you know, passively sit and let things take hold of them instead of organizing themselves and their employees.
Right, right. And that's it is. It's so easy to just become reactionary in your day, especially in an information overloaded society that we live in right now. And if you do that, if you're not the one who stands above the crowd and says, I know what I'm about, I know what I'm going to focus on, you're going to just get swept away like everybody else is. And that's extremely dangerous for business.
So we've talked about a handful of them, but I just sort of want to repeat them, because I think knowing what they are can heighten people's awareness as to the need to deal with them. So in terms of technology, the biggest offenders are what?
Well, first of all, I tell people I don't think technology is the culprit. It's our lack of understanding how to use the technology that's the culprit. We've sort of allowed the technology to become the master and us the servant, when it certainly should be the other way around. But I think one of the biggest places where people allow technology to overrun them, certainly email. Email is a big issue, and many people are checking their email continually. they're always checking their email. I mean, I sometimes ask the question, how many times per hour do you check your email? And some people will say two or three or one, but a lot of people say all the time. And when you're checking your email all the time, that means that you're doing 10 or 12 or 15 switches within the course of an hour just to look at your email. And that is... there's no way that you can be productive in that kind of environment.
People do the same thing with instant messaging.
Right. Well, Yeah, instant messaging is a huge one. I actually just spoke to, I won't mention the company's name, but I spoke to one of the larger IT companies in the world, and they were talking about tech support, and they said, wow, we're always on instant messaging. And I said, well, you know, you guys, if they're in tech support, they've got to be able to do chat. That's how they operate. And I said, no. It's not the tech support chat. It's each other. We're all instant messaging each other. And that is huge productivity. It's just constant switching. I'm looking down at my screen. I'm looking at my email. I'm thinking about this. I'm looking at my instant message. So there are rare environments where instant messaging works well, but most of the time I'll say when it comes to instant messaging or text messaging, unless you've got teenagers, usually not the most efficient way to conduct business.
And then there are also cell phones, regular phones, you know, internet phone, et cetera.
Right. And, you know, here's a radical concept. You can turn the thing off occasionally. I know, you know, that's sometimes I get paid the big bucks to say the most obvious things in the world, but I have worked with so many people that will tell me they leave their phone on all the time, meaning they leave it on sitting next to them when they're sleeping at night. First of all, huge sleep liability. It's hard for you to – I've done a lot of study on sleep hygiene, and you've got to set up an environment that makes it easy for you to sleep. Otherwise, your brain's going to remain active. And having your phone sitting there in the back of your mind as this sort of subconscious reminder that it could ring at any moment is not good for sleep. And if it's not good for sleep, ultimately it's not good for productivity because you have to be rested in order to be at the top of your game. And certainly it'll have an impact on your personal life. Every day at 5 o'clock, Charlie, my phone's off. I don't check my email. I work from home. And every day at 5 o'clock, I have an appointment where my little boy knocks on the door, throws open the door, and says, Daddy, let's play. And I am done. I don't check it. I don't look at it. I don't think about it.
But I think the issue is that there's a common perception that communication is about instant response.
When right.
In fact, I would disagree with that, and I'd be interested in your take on this, is that communication is more about managing expectations than it is about an instant response.
Right, exactly. I use the term culture of now versus a culture of when. The culture of now says, when someone calls me, I need to respond to it now. When someone sends me an email, I need to respond to it now. When I have a quick question, I need it answered now. There's a big, big problem with the culture of now, is that it contradicts itself very soon. Sooner rather than later, you can't do everything now, right? And so what happens is you have to start making choices, and people that live in a culture of now aren't making choices, they're just reacting to everything. The culture of when says, I am going to respond to every single email, or at least I'm going to look at every single email. I am going to deal appropriately with every single piece of paper. I'm going to deal with every single call, but in a timely manner. And this is the time and this is the place that I'm going to deal with it. My clients bring their email inbox to zero every single week. They bring their physical inbox to zero every single week. They respond to every voicemail at the bare minimum once per week.
It all makes good sense to me. It sounds great, but in the back of my head there's another little niggling thought that
sure.
Time management is the notion that what we're dealing with here is a set of habits that we've, you know, for better or worse, adopted over, you know, our careers or lifetimes of responding to calls, responding to people who walk in the door, responding to emails, even though we're in the middle of a conference or whatever. So we've got these habits which we inflict upon ourselves and occasionally let others inflict on us too.
Right.
And there's this bit of an analogy, which is that the way people exercise and eat and whatnot is typically a result of a set of habits they've developed. And we all know, for people trying to lose weight, how tough it can be to change their habits, to go on a diet and actually stop eating the way they have been, to, you know, build exercise into their schedule, et cetera. So what's your solution for getting people to change their habits and make progress with their time management strategy?
I use the term conditioning because it's really about having an automatic response. And I think that's what you're talking about when you say habits. For me, and I think for my clients, when it comes to your personal productivity, it's easier to look at it in terms of the same conditioning that you would need to have if you were a pro athlete or if you were a musician. And what that means is that the basics and the fundamentals should be automatic. When you look at your email, you shouldn't reinvent the wheel every single time. You shouldn't have to redecide how you're going to handle the scheduling of something or where you're going to put that piece of paper that you've been putting in the same pile over and over again. It needs to be a conditioned response so that it's automatic. Because when you have a conditioned response to the basic things, then it actually frees you up to be more creative and responsive to the more important things. So where I come from with it is it is not about gaining the knowledge. It's about getting the conditioned response. It's not, you know, if you were trying to golf, you couldn't read a golf magazine and say, oh, I just learned everything I need to know. I'm going to go out and there, my swing's automatically fixed. Right? It doesn't happen like that. At least never happened like that for me or anyone else I know. You have to have a coach standing outside of you that's watching the way that you handle the club, watching the way that you put your feet, and helping you make the adjustments. And then they say, do it again. Right? And then you do it right. And they say, great, do it again. And they say, great, do it again. And to a large degree, that's exactly the technique that I use when I'm training people, is I'm helping them recondition the way that they deal with the tasks and the items that they have so that long after I'm gone, it's just an automatic response. And I pride myself on that because the biggest testimonial that I get from people is that they're living it years after the training, which is huge.
Right. How about for, you know, the people who can't hire you, or you know, you don't want to fly to New York or wherever. There are a bunch of crazy people who do a lot of multitasking. You know, what are things that they can do to condition themselves?
Well, first, I'm not plugging my program, but I am going to say that that's part of the reason why we put it into a video and coach accountability based program online, because I don't think there's any way to get past accountability to a coach. I think that everyone must have it. It's why I have a coach that I hired to take me through my own program. He sends me the same darn email that we send our clients every single week, and I have to respond to that because it's not enough to know it. You have to have someone holding you accountable for it. And so, you know, I guess that's what I would say is if you're not in a position where you can afford even the online training, then you're going to need to find someone who can hold you accountable for it and who is a trained professional that can watch what you're doing and help you modify your behavior. I don't know any other way to do that.
So I think you've mentioned a fair number of them, but just so we make sure we have them all, what are, you know, whether it's the online training or you're doing it on your own or you know, you show up on my doorstep, what are the things that the steps you walk people through?
Well, I first show them how to set up the system so that they don't have as many gathering points as they have. Most people have too many different places where they're gathering new information and new tasks. The average person that I see has, you know, dozens of gathering points. And I help them bring that number down to six.
So
and that,
give us an example of what you mean by gathering points.
Well, an inbox is certainly a gathering point. Your email inbox is a gathering point. I'll give you an example of how people normally often have too many. You can have multiple email accounts but one email inbox. But what a lot of people have is an email inbox like Outlook, and then they have their Gmail that they're checking online, and they may even have a Hotmail that they're checking online. So they have to go to all these different places. And it goes back to that switch tasking principle, which is that when they're doing that, they're incurring lots of switching tasks by making that switching cost, excuse me, by making those transitions over and over and over again. By getting it all to come into one inbox, you can save huge amounts of time just by making that one little change alone. And you have, you know, lots of these gathering points all over the place, and you need to find a way to bring that down to the smallest number possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So many gathering points to one, hopefully.
Right.
What are the top 2, 3, 4 ideas that you would recommend to anybody listening to this call if they want to, you know, put the idea to a test and see how it can work for them, and in hopes then they'll try those and discover that they really are making progress, but to get where they want to go, they need to then work with you. What would those ideas be?
Sure. I can give a couple of places for anybody listening to the call to start, to get a little bit of sanity. First thing is turn off automatic email notification. Shut that thing down. There's no reason for you to have a little beep on the screen and a note come up on your screen telling you that you just got a message from, you know, some car insurance place. All that is going to do is cause you to switch tasks. So turn off the notification and instead go to a system where you have a regular recurring pattern where you're checking email on your schedule. And that one little thing alone, for people that are caught up in that tyranny of constantly checking email, that will yield a lot. And I would say, take it a step further, is if you have a cell phone that's constantly checking email, honestly, for most people, I recommend that they turn it to manual, meaning that it will not check for email unless you are in there actually deciding that you want to look at email right now.
So there are actually two ideas that inherent in that one idea, which is one, turn off automatic email notification, and two, schedule in the day when you are going to actually go check your email so you're not redeciding every day, oh, I think I'll check it now, but just plan on 2 times a day or whatever it is to check your email.
Right, and that kind of, you know, it's interesting. I'm glad you brought up the 2 times per day. How I come at things in the training that I provide is that I come from a standpoint of principles ahead of the system. A lot of times people will say, this works for me, therefore it works for everyone. This software product works for me, therefore everyone should use this software product. An example that I've heard in the context of email is there's a person who advocates never check email in the morning. For some people, that's great. But for a lot of other people, that's bad advice. That's the worst thing that they could possibly do for their business. The principle at play here is minimize the amount of times that you check your email. So whether you do it at the beginning of the day or the end of the day or 3 times a day or, you know, even once every hour on the hour, you need to take control of how often you're checking it and put it onto a schedule. And I'll just make a comment along that line. A lot of the time management programs out there are built by people who have never suffered from any problem with time management in the past. They're inherently organized. They're on top of everything. They know how to handle stuff. And so they're giving advice that is really geared toward people with that same mindset. I am somebody who was diagnosed freaking off the charts ADHD. my office used to be a complete nightmare. The genetic stock that I came from was my organization system for my dad. He'd take everything, put it in the bag, put it in the attic, and if he couldn't remember what was in the bag a year later, he'd throw the bag away. Okay. So when I'm talking about these things and telling people to do them, I'm coming from a standpoint of someone who has overcome this and has helped a lot of people who have the tendency to be disorganized to overcome it.
Okay. Were there a couple other ideas you were going to share there, or where were we with that list?
Sure. I can give you, let me see, what's another good place? I would say another great thing that you can do is make sure that when you're talking with a person, focus on the person. And again, this is one of those things that seems obvious at the face of it, but most people when they're multitasking, it's involving a human being at some point. And if you want to be inefficient with your paperwork and jump back and forth or your email, and you want to mess up your own productivity that way, go ahead and do that. But when you are talking to a human being, there is another cost beyond just efficiency and productivity, and that is the impact to the relationship. So when you're engaged in a phone call, just like you and I are in, Charlie, you need to make sure that nothing else is pulling your attention away. Or when you're talking to someone and you're in a meeting, turn off the phone or turn off the ringer. And I'm not even saying put it on vibrate, because if you put it on vibrate, you're not disturbing the other person, but who are you still disturbing? All right? It's you. You're still getting distracted. When I go speak to companies, and you know, I'll speak to a large group, I'll do a little exercise, and I'll say, I want everyone to turn to the person next to them, and for 30 seconds, teach them something you learned today. So they do that. I say, okay, stop. Now switch turns, you know, take turns. But now the other person multitask while the person is teaching them. And they get done with that exercise, and I say, in one word, please describe to me, those of you who were talking while the other person multitasked on you, how that made you feel. And the one word I hear more often than others is unimportant.
And that also mentions one of my favorite pet peeves, which is related to this, which is call waiting. If you ever called somebody on the phone and then halfway through the conversation they say, oh, I've got another call coming in, hold on. I mean, it that makes you feel
right.
Unimportant, insulted, and it's always then you have to, you know, if they come back, it's hard to reengage and get the conversation going again.
Right. And so let's tie this back into the core of what your message is all about, which is marketing. What is the marketing message you tell your customers when you deal with them that way? You can you can spend thousands of dollars on the best campaigns or the best, you know, presenting the best face to the world, but when you or your employees multitask on another person, it's sort of like saying, "Hi, you're unimportant. How can I help you today?" I mean, you just wasted a lot of money and a lot of time with your marketing when you multitask on somebody.
Well, Dave, you've shared a lot of ideas, but I think the message you have is vitally important to every small business owner and entrepreneur. And I think because of their situations, they're probably multitasking more fiercely and crazily than most, but you know, maybe not compared to some of your Fortune 500 companies you work with. But my question is, at this point, if anybody in this call wants to take it to the next level, what are the things that they can do to get access to you and the various knowledge that you have?
The easiest way to do that is to go to davecrenshaw.com. Crenshaw is C-R-E-N-S-H-A-W. davecrenshaw.com. And we have free resources that they can get access to, and certainly we can let them know about how they can get more detailed training there as well.
So you have, well, tell me a little bit about the resources and training. So you have a set of free videos people can sign up to get.
Sure. I'm being a little bit vague because we do change it regularly. Right now, if they go there, they can get a series of candid productivity videos, which are really fun. It's sort of like Extreme Makeover Productivity Edition, where I have a camera with me and I say, hey, come follow me into this office. And I'll go into someone's office unrehearsed, we haven't practiced, and I'll say, what's your biggest productivity challenge? They'll tell me what it is, and I'll solve it for them right there on the spot. And so we have a series of videos like that. And then, you know, as you watch the videos, you can be given the opportunity to get more in-depth training. But it's a really fun series of videos there with a lot of, you know, you were asking for hard content. There's a lot of hard content in those videos.
So in addition to the free videos, obviously, if they want to take it to the next level, you have a training program people can sign up for online?
Right. We have the whole process that executives, if they want to work with me one-on-one, they're welcome to do that. That's about $10,000 for me to come and work with them personally. But we have that very same process filmed and put online with worksheets, with action steps, and coupled with my trained coaches, and you can get the whole process, the exact same process, for about $100 a month. So it's much more affordable that way.
And if somebody signs up for that, how many months does it typically take before they can begin to see the real results?
Honestly, the first month.
Oh, very good.
The first month. The reason why people still stay with us is because we continue to hold them accountable. We have a knowledge base where we're all, people will ask questions. How do I, I'm trying to think of something off the top of my head, but how do they do something on their computer? And we'll actually film a video and show them how to do it and then put it up on the knowledge base so everyone can learn. And then I give webinars twice a month where I respond to questions, bring in guests, that sort of thing. So, yeah, in the first month, they can completely change their world. And if they don't want to stay, that's great. But if they do want to stay, we have a lot of great resources.
Sounds fantastic. And now, since you haven't plugged it, I'm going to plug it a little for you because I, in preparing for the call, took a read through The Myth of Multitasking. I loved it. It was short and sweet, and it was easy to understand and made the basics glaringly obvious and some of the solutions incredibly simple to understand. And I recommend that everybody who's listening to this call run out and grab a copy of The Myth of Multitasking by Dave Crenshaw.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
And as a coach consultant, I can only completely affirm your experience that the biggest problem for any small business owner, any entrepreneur who's trying to be more successful, is understanding how to manage their time effectively so they can actually implement the ideas they need to grow their business. So if there was one place I would think people should start before they even think about marketing, it's thinking about how they're going to use their time so they can actually get to marketing.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, I'll say this one thing, too. We have a new thing that's coming out, and I think it's going to be really successful. We're calling it the two-day productivity miracle, which is sort of cheesy, but it really is that, where I will walk through 100 people at a time online the entire process. Where I'll start it off, I'll respond with question and answers, and that's another option that they can get access to.
And how can they get on your list so they can learn about that?
Well, if they go to DaveCrenshaw.com, they can get access to that on the list. We're also going to be setting up a new website. I think it'll be available by the time this interview airs at ProductivityMiracle.com. That they can sign up to become one of those on the next group. I know our next one's coming up here in a couple of weeks, and we'll be doing another one at the end of the year.
Great. Well, Dave, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me and to share your ideas with our listeners, and I greatly appreciate your joining me for this interview.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, Charlie. I had a lot of fun.
Great. Thanks again, Dave.